This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Our fair country, Canada, is north of the USA. Our maritimes are lovely and our prairies give us hay. You might think you Yankees are better than us Canucks, but we don't need no microchips inside our hockey pucks.
Good day.
Bonjour.
How you doing, partner?
Welcome to I Read the News Today, oh boy.
Or IRTN for short.
That's Keith Gottschalks, the Yank from Iowa, the bleeding heart of America.
And that's Matt Adams, if you can't tell from the accent or the attitude, is an American and a Canadian.
And today we're going to be having an all-election episode, the big upcoming elections in the United States and some by-elections here in Canada.
Oh my, it's you can smell it from here.
And how's the weather down there?
Cold. Good election chill in the air. Every night is well below freezing or well below zero for you Canadians using the centigrade scale. And in the day, it's beautiful fall weather with highs in the mid-40s. How about you?
Well, it's been beautiful, brisk fall weather. We got some nice sun here. I don't think we're quite having the when hell freezes over and the Republicans lose situation that you're having, but we'll get to that.
All right. Well, right now here we have our first segment, Below the Fold, some news that you may have missed in under a few minutes. Starting out first from the Associated Press, it's a Coles to Newcastle story. Seattle, awash in tourism dollars, has come up with a catchy new slogan for the city, Metro Natural. No, not metrosexual. That's what comes to mind. Metro Natural. Now, what does it mean? Seattle offers the best of both worlds, said Visitors President Don Welsh. We have a vibrant urban center surrounded by pristine wilderness and outdoor recreation. Well, I was there last summer, and that may be true, but unless you're a native, the price tag to live in this urban paradise might make a better name for Seattle, Metro Pecunious. Look it up.
And the Washington Post reported that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security plans to spend $1.2 billion on nuclear detection equipment for U.S. ports and border crossings that don't really work. According to the Government Accountability Office, Homeland Security ignored its own tests, showing that the equipment failed to reach the target of detecting enriched uranium 95% of the time, when the nuclear material was shielded, detection rates ranged from 17% to 53%. The GAO said the Homeland Security, quote, relied on potential future performance to justify the purchase, unquote. Nothing left to say about that.
Ugh. All right, from AP, the scourge of the falling blue ice has struck again, this time in Chino, California. William and Evelyn McElroy watching a movie when the ice crashed through their roof and destroyed a bed. But William said the crash shook the house, but they thought it was a car outside, so they went back to watch the movie. They discovered the 2-foot hole in the roof and the destroyed bed the next morning. And yes, the blue ice from heaven is frozen effluvium that leaks from holding tanks of a passenger jet's bathroom. Most of the time it melts off on landing. Sometimes, however, it detaches, generally falling harmlessly on uninhabited areas. So if you see the big blue popsicle, don't lick it.
And CBC Television has a new talent show this fall, Triple Sensation, produced by movie and theater producer mogul Garth Drabinsky. The show seeks to promote and support youth who can sing, act, and dance, the so-called triple threat. Well, maybe the show can also promote double-entry bookkeeping as well, because Mr. Drabinsky, besides being an officer of the Order of Canada, was indicted in New York on charges of accounting fraud, failed to appear for trial, is now under a fugitive arrest warrant in the United States. He also was charged in 2002 by the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, with fraud and is still awaiting trial. Drabinsky told the Toronto Star he's looking for youth that are, quote, brave of heart, unquote. Just like his investors, I guess.
Oh. Now, Pat Tillman was the former Arizona Cardinals football player killed by friendly fire in Afghanistan in 2004. What most people don't know is that his brother Kevin joined the Army with him, and they both became Rangers. Silent since Pat's death, Kevin, now out of the Army, is speaking out on the website truthdig.com. Here's a part of what Kevin says on that site. Quote, "Somehow, the more soldiers that die, the more legitimate the illegal invasion becomes. Somehow, the same incompetent, narcissistic, virtuous, vacuous, malicious criminals are still in charge of this country. Somehow, this is tolerated. Somehow, nobody is accountable for this." Indeed. Check it out, folks. Truthdig.com.
And finally, The Guardian reported that a trial study on diet in a UK prison showed that when young men were fed multivitamins, minerals, and essential fatty acids, the number of violent offenses they committed in the prison fell by 37%. The former chief inspector of prisons, Lord Ramsbotham, said that he is now, quote, absolutely convinced that there is a direct connection between diet and antisocial behavior, both that bad diet causes bad behavior and that good diet prevents it, unquote. Maybe I will pass on those chips.
Oof. I always thought that if you fed these guys a bunch of like cream puffs and pies and thick red meat, that they would be very docile in prison. So that's an interesting story.
Yeah, ring-dings
story.
And ho-hos.
There you
works
go.
Works for kids, so, you know, why not?
To get them all fat and lazy, right? Just like your kids. All right. And that is news you may have missed for this edition of IRTN. Well, we've got an all-election edition here in this episode, and let's start out with two by-elections that have been sprung by Stephen Harper on the Canadian public. Well, right in the middle of the Liberal Leadership Convention. Isn't that strange, Matt? No, you know, nothing funny about that, eh?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly taking flack for doing that, and the timing is suspicious. They think the Liberals are down. They can't prepare. But, you know, I think it's a declare on his part because, you know, it's getting, you know, the Green Party is now looking at, you know, they had a snowball chance of nothing, and now they're looking at potential two seats.
Yeah, you know, I saw that about Elizabeth May, and the reason I saw that, actually, I watch Rick Mercer's report on the internet, and I try never to miss an episode, and they had her out somewhere in the, I think in Gatineau, and they took her to the woods and gave her a chainsaw and made her cut down a tree. I kid you not. Now, she seems like a really nice person. She was really trying to be a policy wonk, trying to get her talking points in over Rick, which is, you know, not an easy thing to do. And she actually, you know, was a good sport about it and helped cut this tree down. In fairness to her, the tree was threatening a house nearby, so that was part of it. But I was amazed at the fact that she can go from I think she's in Nova, isn't she in Nova Scotia?
She's got a strong environmental background. She used to be a bit of a red Tory.
Oh yeah, okay.
And but she's very politically savvy. You know, they made their announcements, and she made it when she became party leader, and then she was making proclamations outside of, you know, the traditional environmental scope of the Green Party. You know, talking about Afghanistan, talking about Iraq, and she was getting all kinds of news coverage for it. And I think she's, you know, got a shot, especially now that the Liberal, the Tory senator's not going to run, Michael Fortier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she was in Cape Breton, Canso, in Nova Scotia, which would have been her riding. She had lived on the island for many years before she moved to Ontario, so now she's going to run, I believe, in London North Centre. And also, there's a Quebec riding open I don't know too much about. But do you think... I'm wondering how this is sort of... I mean, we had in the States here, obviously Hillary Clinton moved to New York State to run for the Senate, and that caused a lot of accusations about carpetbagger and whatnot, but she won. It looks like she's going to win. She's got a 2-1 advantage right now. How do Canadians see that, people moving halfway across the country to run in open ridings?
You know, I moved up here. I was kind of stunned as an American, but people would say, oh, well, where's this leader going to run? Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe he'll run here, maybe he'll run there, as if it was nothing that strange. And I find it's still something that's much more widely accepted here than it is in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So when Jack Layton was running for the NDP, he's looking around for where he was going to run. You know, he could have run almost anywhere. technically, and we can get into this maybe in a bit, but in the United States, the qualifications for running for U.S. Congress are in the Constitution, and those are not residency requirements, but I think states can actually set some requirements.
They
and
do.
It certainly is considered rare. Like, you're not going to run in Alaska if you've never had residency there.
Well, Hillary...
But in Canada, you can pull that, like that off.
Well, yeah, and the Clintons had to buy a house in Chappaqua, you might remember, in order for her to establish residency in New York State so she could run. So the states do have some kind of control over that. I'm assuming that, let's say Ms. May wins in the riding of Ludden North Center, she's going to at least have to have an apartment there or something, I'm assuming. Is that correct?
Well, politically, but I don't think legally she has to.
Oh, so, okay. Well, that is interesting. But this would give her a seat. It would also... Well, I understand what she was talking to Rick Mercer is they let her come into Parliament. They put her in an alcove where she can kind of watch what's going on. But this way, she would be an active, you know, Green Party leader within the Parliament with the full status of a party leader.
It would be the first time the Green Party had an elected representative in Canada. Now, we, of course, have a possibility of another seat with the sort of the expulsion of the Tory, whose name has just blanked on me last week. And, you know, the Green Parties are talking to him about becoming a member as well.
A conservative?
Yeah.
That's amazing to me, how somebody from the Conservative Party could run as a Green. I mean, did they put like something over their head to kind of, you know, get the brainwash them and then put a whole new form of political ideology in them? I mean, you know, Belinda Stronach walking across to the Liberals, I mean, to me is not that big a deal, but somebody going Conservative to Green, it would seem to me.
Well, you got to remember the former leadership of the Green Party here was fairly libertarianish in some ways, at least like kind of free marketish when it came to economics and politics, and there's a bit of an internal struggle happening with the Greens, and so you'll see some sympathy there. You'll also find, like you do in the United States, right wingers very concerned about tenants and foreign oil and want to have alliances with environmental groups. I'm not saying that that's what's going on here, but the potential certainly exists.
Okay, do you think she'll do it? You think she'll get elected?
Well, she's already talking to him.
Right.
I'm embarrassed that I'm on his name here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a real possibility.
Okay. Well, right now, Garth Turner was the one you were thinking of. He's out of the conservative caucus. So it's like 124 conservatives, 101 liberals, 50 black, and 29 new Democrats, 2 independents, and are 2 vacancies here. So I don't know. Is it too early to say this is any kind of referendum on Harper? I know that there's some factions looking toward calling an election next spring. What do you think?
I think Harper overextended himself. Was a little too confident and is now beginning to pay for it. And the new polls are coming out and showing that they really haven't gained much ground. The Liberals are doing, you know, okay, and they don't even need her.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're vulnerable. We talked last week with the Canadian Hot Air Act. They're just being slammed on.
Mm.
Just slammed, even from the right-wing media here. So I think it's possible that bill will fail. That won't be seen as a confidence motion, but it could fail.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting.
If becoming a Green, which he hasn't, then who knows?
Okay. Speaking of conservative political parties that are crashing and burning right now, you want
to see? Yeah, let's move on to the United States.
To the United States. I'm keep wondering just how low can it go, although there are some right now who are claiming that the Republicans may indeed, in the last 2 weeks of this election, make a run back. Right now, the 2 critical Senate seats, I do believe that the House is a foregone conclusion that the Democrats will seize the House back. The Senate is the one everybody's watching, and 2 states in particular right now are hanging really by a hair, Tennessee and Virginia. If the Republicans can keep both of those. And I'll tell you what, it's been just nasty and dirty and slimy in both. Of course, you know George Allen and his macaca comments in Virginia. We can talk a little bit later about the GOP attack ads that are being played out in Tennessee against Democratic Representative Harold Ford. But right now, it does certainly seem that all the stops are being pulled in the states. And, you know, we're even getting this, okay, we're going to switch tactics and do different things in Iraq. I mean, even my wife, who's not a very big political maven, last night was listening to this on CNN, and she's saying, boy, it's really close to that November election for the Republicans, huh?
Well, I think what's interesting is, if you look at poll after poll, year after year, incumbents almost always win in the United States.
True.
It's like a 90%, you know, return rate. And when you poll Americans, they say, what do you think about Congress? They always say, well, Congress is full of a bunch of losers, and we hate Congress, and all politicians suck. But when you say, what do you think about your own congressperson? Like, well, our congressperson's okay.
Yeah, he's a swell guy.
So when you look at these broad polls that say people hate the Republicans, that doesn't always translate down to race by race. But the people have been looking at race by race that I really like is the Cook Political Report.
Okay.
Because they're nonpartisan and they rank things as sort of solid, safe seats, in play, or it could go either way. And cookpolitical.com is where you go. Now, they do it every 2 weeks or so through the entire year, or this whole cycle. And when the Democrats started, they said they had 183 safe seats, which happens to be exactly what they have right now. Republicans started with 202 safe seats. They're now ranked with 170 safe seats.
Mm.
So they've lost 30 safe seats. Plus, there's a number of seats that are up for toss, right? Who knows where they're going to go? Leaning this way, leaning that way.
Exactly.
But even with that margin of error, it looks very unlikely the Republicans will hold. So I agree with you there. The Senate's another call. I would still be surprised. They have a lot more money. They still. The White House is certainly scrambling, and it's getting very embarrassing for a lot of Republicans, but in some of it, it could be seen as lowered expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got Bush stumping for this Republican, Don Sherwood, yet another Republican who's had a 5-year extramarital affair, and he just settled a lawsuit that he choked a woman.
Right, the choker.
Right, the choker. And Bush said, Tony Snow, his spokesperson, quote, when someone said, well, how come you're running on behalf of a confessed adulterer? And he said, quote, Bush believes we're all sinners. We all seek forgiveness. And in this particular case, he's supporting Don Sherwood's candidacy.
You know, it's amazing to me that they'll play the Christian card at some point to absolve themselves from all sin. But woe to the Democrat who finds himself on the wrong end of an extramarital affair or an assault against a woman. What I'm looking at here, again, I was last time we did this, it was electoral-vote.com, which is a site that I've been checking out every day. The latest Virginia poll shows George Allen still holding a 47-43 advantage over Jim Webb, according to the Mason-Dixon polling service. And right now, it looks like a 50-50 split, which still favors the Republicans because, obviously, the president of the Senate votes in a tie. The vice president of the United States, being a Republican, would be the tiebreaker. Tennessee and Virginia are the critical states. The Democrats can win every other Senate race up for grabs. If the Republicans can hold on to Tennessee or Virginia, they will continue to keep control of the House. And we mentioned, of course, Webb and Allen. Allen with his racist comments about the Jim Webb's campaign worker following him around. Again, in desperation, the Tennessee race is really heating up now, and it's gotten really nasty. There's a new Republican Party television ad out that, according to the LA Times, and I've seen bits and pieces, features a scantily clad white woman winking and inviting a black candidate, and Ford is black. He would be the first African-American candidate elected since the end of the Civil War. She invites him to call me. This is the same bunch of thugs that accused a Iowa politician of being a communist not too many weeks ago in their TV ad. So they're turning their attacks on Representative Harold Ford, who is running against the former Chattanooga mayor Bob Corker. And right now, Corker has like a 2 percentage point lead right now. But this ad I just want to get into a little bit here. 30-second ad. A black woman notes that Ford looks good and asks, isn't that enough? Others suggest Ford backs privacy for terrorists, accepts money from the pornography industry, wants to raise taxes, and get this, backs letting Canada deal with the North Korean nuclear arms threat. The character who has raised complaints is a blonde woman who speaks in a hushed, suggestive tone and says that she met Ford at the Playboy party. At the end of the ad, she reappears and says, Harold, call me. She winks and holds her hand up as if holding a phone. I mean, this is the Southern
State. The Playboy party.
I have no idea where that, you know, this is an allegation that Ford accepted money from Playboy. You know, I mean, okay, come on. Playboy.
One thing a lot of people don't understand is that in the United States, the libel laws are almost the opposite of what they are in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
The more of a public figure you are, the more people can take shots at you and say, you know, you did this, you did that, and it's satire or whatever.
Right.
Canada, public figures actually are given extra protection. So you can, in fact, one magazine outed a candidate for having an arrest record, and he sued for libel, not because it wasn't true, and he won.
That's really interesting. That's something I didn't know about. I was wondering why Canadian politics was so civil until they actually get on the floor of Parliament, and then you have Peter McKay calling Belinda Stronach a dog. I guess that
you can't do it. You can't have these kind of ads.
But you can say it on the floor of the Parliament.
Yeah, you certainly can. No. Just like you can in the Senate. There's
right.
No libel or harassment
exactly.
Laws on the floor.
But the Senate is so polite, it's ridiculous. It really is. I mean, the House is a lot more raucous, shall we say. But the Republicans running this ad, and they are not apologizing for its racist content. I guess the whole point was, and you know, Hugh Hefner spreads money around to political candidates, and I don't think that's a big deal to say that he took money from pornographers. I think really casts it in an interesting light. Danny Diaz, the Republican Party spokesman, said, I won't even entertain the premise that the ad is racially offensive. They can look in the camera and lie here, but anybody who's followed the Southern strategy that Richard Nixon's people came up with in 1968 sees that same strain here in the Ford-Corker Senate race. They are definitely the showing a white woman coming on to a black man who happens to be a politician in these ads. It is so transparent, it is so offensive, it is so racist that in Tennessee it may actually win. It may actually be the difference.
Negative campaigning works.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't work all the time, but it works. I mean, it worked with Willie Horton. It works with the Swift voting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Democrats have done their fair share.
Now, I wanted to ask you what you thought of all the histrionics coming out of the White House about Iraq. The cynical side of me.
As opposed to what?
Yes. Well, as opposed to staying the course, which nobody in the White House or anybody working for the president is allowed to say anymore.
Oh, yeah, they don't say that anymore.
No, oh, no, but they will say, well, we'll change strategy and tactics, you know. I wonder, after the election, let's say the Republicans hold on to the Senate, once this is all over, is all this talk going to evaporate into the ether and it'll be business as usual in Iraq? That is what I would assume to be true.
If the Democrats take the House, they can do all kinds of things. Like, they will release more of the studies done on 9/11, look into Halliburton. They can do all kinds of investigations about Saddam. Whether or not they attempt to do a pullout without the Senate leading up to a presidential election is tough to say.
No,
we'll
I don't
talk about that post November 7th.
Yeah, I don't think that's even I think that's a non-starter issue. Nancy Pelosi was on 60 Minutes and said, first of all, impeachment is off the table. If she's Speaker, that's not going to happen. So I think the Bush people can count on Democrats like Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, who want to be president, are going to let them basically continue to prosecute the war in Iraq the way they want to. Yes, there'll be a lot of yelling and screaming coming from the House. That can be isolated, cut off, and contained. I think that's how they're going to play this. I think they're singing this tune now to appear conciliatory leading up to the elections, but I really don't think there's any substance to this at all. I want to throw in one more thing here, though, while we're talking about the elections. Again, Reuters reports today long lines and long counts threaten to mar the congressional elections next month. They say the new voting machines, I don't know if you've heard anything about this.
Oh, yeah, we should have a special show on that.
Oh, man. And now they're saying, Reuters saying today, the results could be delays in knowing whether Democrats capture one or both houses of Congress. Paul DeGregorio's chairman of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, said in close elections, it may be days and weeks before a winner is known in a particular race. On the other hand, he says this is an improvement over previous elections, and said, quote, I think voters can trust the system. Now, you can't say one, you can't say what he said before and then say that. That's what I don't understand, how American politicians can do that.
We'll have to have a special November 8th episode.
Oh, we could have it just like the 2004 elections, where it's days and weeks before we know who's elected president. You know, we could have one of the election in Virginia, the Virginia senatorial or Tennessee senatorial could be hanging by hanging chad again, okay? Or one of these electronic voting fiascos. The Diebold machines. And it could come down to who wins the Senate in Tennessee or Virginia as to who is going to control the Senate. And oh, you know, it's like I'm thinking to myself, here we go again. I don't even want to think about it. If it happens, we'll deal with it, but I prefer not to think about it. Any other comments you have on the upcoming elections here in the States?
Well, just a quick one for Canadians, and that's that the U.S. Constitution prohibits members of Congress from also holding federal office. So unlike the parliamentary system where cabinet members are often sitting in the legislature, they're forbidden to do so there. How's it affect our elections work and how we do about it? Just your little factoid of the day.
The only exception to that, as I mentioned before, is the Vice President of the United States, who only votes in the Senate to break a tie.
But he's not officially in the Senate.
Not officially in the Senate, although...
as the President of the Senate.
As the President of the Senate, he can sit there all he wants and glower over it, which our particular Vice President has done on occasion, up there like Jabba the Hutt with that stare of his. But that's the way... Dick Cheney, what a guy. If he didn't exist, we'd have to create him. Well, that's all the time we have on our election update to solve the world's problems for this show. And we'll be back soon to provide our own particular Canadian and American spin on the world on I Read the News Today. Oh boy. This is Keith Gottschalk from the Bleeding Heart of America and
Matt Adams, sorry, jumping in like a hard-ass American and a soft-hearted Canadian.
Now, be a Canadian and apologize. Oh, I should have said
that. I'm very sorry.
Oh, you're very sorry.
I doubt it'll happen again.
Okay. All right, everyone. We'll see you. We'll see you in a week or two on I Read the News Today. Oh, boy.
Tonight at the door for you, man.
It's cool in many ways to be Canadian.
It's cool because it's cold up here.
We won't say that we're better.
No.
It's just that we're less worse. We won't say that we're better. It's just that we're less worse.